from the cosmic legends of the universe,
Dave Damaschek.
The mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hi and hello, podcasters. It's your old pal Dave Damaschek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are, here in Studio 66 in downtown Los Angeles. It's that time of the week to talk college football. That's right, and we're joined by our two experts. Just so we don't play favorites, I'm going to introduce the guy who we usually wait till second with. I'm talking about the man, the myth, the Blue Horseshoe.
He's the Blue Horseshoe. He's the Blue Horseshoe. With his evil computers, he'll calculate who beats who. He's the Blue Horseshoe.
What's going down there, Shoe?
Hey, Dave. Welcome. Thank you for having me back. It's a big week for me.
Yes, it is. It's a very big week. It's Red River Shootout Week.
Red River Rivalry.
I'm sorry. Well, listen, don't correct me right out of the gate here. See, this is why I always leave you till second. Let's talk now to the man who is Ron Franklin's partner every Saturday, talking college football on ESPN, Ed Cunningham. What's going down, Ed?
Not coming on until my song's ready.
I'd say that's fair.
This is my last Damaschek show without a theme song.
I hear your noise. No one feels worse about it than I do. But listen, I appreciate the warning. That's all. Like you could have taken a Michael Crabtree type stand, but no, you fired a fair warning shot, and now it will be on me if we don't hear you again. So you
that's only because I'm not listening to Neon Dion's advice right now. We're on the outs, Dion and I.
Well, thank goodness, thank goodness at least for me. You and Franklin are going to be at the, you're going to be in Stillwater this weekend for the Missouri and Oklahoma State game, eh?
Yeah, the better of the two Oklahoma college towns, we will be hanging out in Stillwater.
I drove through from Chicago on my way to L.A. when I made the move. I drove through Oklahoma City. Other than that, I really don't have much of a sense of the great state of Oklahoma.
Well, let me interrupt really quickly. I mean, Ed, I have to ask you the question. What's more important, to try to rile me up or to be credible? Because anybody knows that it's easy to rile me up. But anybody who says that Stillwater is better than Oklahoma City is terrible.
No. That's not what I said.
Or Norman.
I said the better college town.
That's what we're talking about.
Stillwater does have
pretty. Norman is a wonderful place. I enjoy it every time I go there. We stay at the unbelievably cool Sooner Legend Hotel, which, as you know, has each suite. I was in the Keith Jackson suite this past week.
Wow.
So it's, it's rare that you can.
What is it? The jersey hangs in there? What else?
Oh, it's pictures. This place has more memorabilia than you've ever seen collected on one college team.
Wow, that's awesome. I think I'd rather that than getting enshrined into a Hall of Fame. I'd rather there just be a Damaschek room in some hotel in, my native Pittsburgh, PA.
Yeah, no, it's pretty rough. Anyway, I enjoy Norman, always have. Beautiful campus, wonderful hosts. But it's a suburb of Oklahoma City. I mean, that's what it's become. 35 now goes all the way down to Norman. And so you just kind of feel like you're in a suburb. And I'm just saying, for a college town, my older brother went to Virginia Tech, Blacksburg, Virginia. Great college town.
Is that right? That's another place I don't really have any sense for.
Great college town. Norman's close to the airport. Norman, you're in and out.
So we are getting bad analysis right here. We're getting jaded analysis.
Here's the question for any 17-year-old.
A college town should not be within a 2.5-3 hour drive of an international airport.
Well, what about where do the foxes run free? In Norman or Stillwater?
Yeah, it's the same. You're not slumming either way.
Is that right?
Oklahoma's beautiful women. I will say this. For Stillwater, if you like beautiful women and guys with red hair and belt buckles, Oklahoma State is for you. If you like pretentious guys and beautiful women, then you'll love Norman. But Norman's like
hat. Hey, Damaschek, the frat hats?
Yeah, well, that's alive and well everywhere.
Where the bill really bends down under and it's frayed because it's been worn every day for 180 days.
Sure.
Frat hat.
Yeah. I didn't know that it had been given an official name. Frat hat. Yeah, I never liked that look. I know that that's strike one on any guy who I see walking around in a lid looking like that. Brett Favre, actually, he wears a frat hat.
You never see that below the Mason-Dixon line at all. You never see that, the frat hat with a tie either.
Yeah, I don't think that's what they, you know, and then let's get into the actual football talk here. But the one strike against SEC football, every year everybody says there's no better atmosphere than SEC games. But that, to me, as a student, that would stink, having to wear a tie and everything to a football game. That sounds lousy to me.
Yeah, but you get to kiss the girl you came with every touchdown in some places.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well,
I
in some
get out.
Places. Well, they do. I know they do that at A&M.
I believe they do it at Ole Miss as well, I believe.
But sometimes...
Oh, sorry.
If you're
I'm almost Georgia as well.
Well, if you're smooth like the Blue Horseshoe, you got to kiss your date even when you don't score a touchdown.
Yeah, that's because she's your wife, dude.
Well, that's true.
All right, much to discuss here, fellas. And I guess let's start with it. It's for once, it does make sense to talk about the shoe school there, Oklahoma going up against Texas here. And the story is, I get the impression that a lot of people are thinking, throw out what Oklahoma has looked like so far. Sam Bradford now a game under his belt. He's ready to go. 3.5-point favorites are the Longhorns. But I get the sense that there are going to be a lot of people who think they're smart putting money down on Oklahoma because the Sooners are back. Shoe, how say you?
Well, let me start by saying two things. One, if I was not a Sooner, I would declare this get out of debt Saturday because the line is, what, Texas -3? And I don't see how Oklahoma can win this game, realistically. I mean, I love them, and I'm going to the game 21 years in a row, and I'm going to be obnoxious.
Before you get obnoxious, you also announced several times that you weren't going, then you decided you were going, and then you backed out again.
That's a different story, Dave. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment. My wife, who's also a therapist, actually had to do a session with me. It's not a beautiful thing. But anyways, I'm going to say this because I actually want to defer it to Ed first because he's closer to the situation, believe it or not, just broadcasting the Oklahoma game last week. I don't see how Oklahoma could win that game for four quarters. I think it's conceivable that they're ahead at the half, that they come out looking great. But as far as I'm concerned, if Texas decides to blitz, Oklahoma has no chance because the offensive line is so poor. Moreover, the last three teams to beat Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, Texas, Florida, BYU, and Miami all had the same thing, which was just throw the ball underneath, use Oklahoma's speed to neutralize them, and you're going to be fine. And I don't see Colt McCoy doing anything different from that this week, even though they're down two running backs. I mean, Ed, you'd probably be able to do better than me to try to convince me I have a shot this week, but I don't really know how. If we win, it's going to be an upset.
I don't disagree. I think all of us get into that place where we start overthinking stuff, but I didn't walk away from Oklahoma on Saturday in Bradford's first game back thinking that they had a chance to win. But then I watched Texas against Colorado that night, and I know it was wacky. I know there was the fumbles and the kick returns and all that stuff that make the game weird. But Colorado is as bad as a team as I've seen all year with my own two eyes. And I've done Illinois, so that's saying something.
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with what you're saying there, Ed, but the shoe, you say get out of debt Saturday. I agree. You know, you see that I have the number 3.5 for the Longhorns. Go ahead.
No. Does that mean get out of debt because you're laying it all on Texas?
Yeah, all on Texas. Yeah. And here's why. Here's what I'm thinking based on what you just said there, Ed. First of all, if you took Oklahoma off of you took the OU off of their helmets and the season had played out and this was Baylor, the spread would be much higher in Texas's favor. The other thing that drove it down is exactly what you just said, the Colorado game. But isn't that a classic sort of letdown game? They're getting ready for the Oklahoma game next week. In fact, isn't it sort of impressive that Oklahoma Texas suddenly finds itself down and they can just, obliterate the deficit and end up blowing the Buffalo.
No. Look, I'm not going to take too much away from Colorado because I agree with that completely. It certainly was a little bit of a sleepwalker for them, and then when they woke up, they just put their foot on the gas and pulled away. I agree with that. But the only thing I think that saves Oklahoma, they are not good enough on offense to win this game right now, I don't think. But the only caveat I give to that is, remember, Sam Bradford, who – I know his numbers were gaudy last week, and I know that there were at least, by our count, 8 or 9 drops, several of them in the red zone. So you're talking about drops that may cost points. He was not great, and that offense is not great with all of the people that are missing, and a lot of it goes up front. The offensive line is not playing at a high level right now. But the question, I think, that if you're a Longhorn fan, if I had one concern, if I were a Longhorn fan, is Bradford is healthy. There's no two ways about it. In watching him in practice last week and at the game against Baylor on Saturday, he's healthy. But the last 2 weeks, he's only practiced part-time, and he's only practiced part-time with the second string. So now you bring a guy who's a Heisman Trophy winner for a lot of reasons, some of which include his leadership skills, and you give him a week and possibly Ryan Broyles back, because it looks like he may come off the shelf. And who knows, guys? He might throw for 350, 400.
I completely agree with you. This is one of the all-time, last year, one of the all-time college football offenses. And so you have a lot of those pieces back, including, like you say, the most important piece. To me, I think as a college football fan, you need to root for Texas. If you don't have roots back to Oklahoma, you need to be rooting for Texas, because if Oklahoma wins this one, then it is the apocalypse now. It's the chaos will have arrived once again in college football.
Well, why you don't think some people like chaos and want to see it?
Sure, I guess so.
Like
yeah,
my old man just loves chaos because he thinks chaos is actually going to change the system, and it's not going to change the system. But here, looking at it in another way is, if you want to get a smooth national championship game where you have undefeated versus undefeated, root for Texas this week. What's going to be bizarre is if Oklahoma wins, not only does Texas not play for the national championship, they probably won't even win the conference, and probably won't even win the Big 12, which is even crazier because of the way Oklahoma would have to then lose twice, which chances of them losing twice in conference could happen, but it's very small, especially.
Well, you're ruling out a three-way tie again, though, there, Shu.
Well, no, but you have to remember that I don't think Oklahoma State is going to come into, remember, a three-way tie only matters if there is a three-way tie, and Oklahoma State's probably going to finish in conference with 2 losses, thus making it head-to-head. But, you know, you are going to have a chaotic situation should Texas lose, because you set into motion who is the next number one team with 1 loss, and right now that's Virginia Tech. But moreover, you have to remember that the Big East is a BCS conference. I did a big analysis on the BCS this week, looking at the current state of the formula and what's going to happen as we get down the line. Believe it or not, if Cincinnati or South Florida should run the table in the Big East, the BCS conference, and TCU should run the table, and Virginia Tech and USC should also all win out, the order of finish to play in the BCS national title game, assuming that Texas were to lose, would be Virginia Tech, most likely TCU, then USC, and then Cincinnati.
Well, hold on a second. When you give those sorts of projections, how can you possibly know? Let's say South Florida, Cincinnati goes into South Florida on Thursday night.
That's where, and Zach, I love it, but Dave, that's where it falls apart, is because the one thing which by the way, that analysis is spot on. If one thing happens, no chaos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so if everybody beats who they're supposed to beat after Texas loses one game, so I think it's good to have that conversation, but I mean, chaos usually rules about every second or third Sunday in college football.
If South Florida, though, if the only loss that they take all year is at home to Cincinnati, and then beyond that, what if Pitt doesn't lose again? How does that not are two better opponents than TCU will have beaten all season
yes,
long. I don't know how that would be.
But they may. We can argue if they're better, but here's the bottom line.
Yeah, I don't agree that completely with that, Dave.
Yeah, let me say something. That TCU's 2 remaining games are BYU in Utah, and Cincinnati's are South Florida and Pitt. From a human poll perspective, you might get the benefit of the doubt with Cincinnati, saying that Cincinnati plays the tougher schedule. From the computer perspective, TCU would get more value from beating BYU in Utah. And as of right now, TCU's composite ranking in the BCS computer polls is 8. Cincinnati's is roughly 9.5. They're a full 1.5 spot better. In the human polls right now, TCU is only ahead, Cincinnati's only ahead of BYU by 0.014 of a percentage point. So when you get to the matter of who's better, it doesn't matter. Because Cincinnati's opponents are not superior to BYU's. It's an argument where we're both going to be right and we're both wrong. But when you get to the computers where there is no argument, because what they say goes, and where it's math, believe it or not, the computers put more stock in a victory right now over BYU and Utah than where South Florida is and Pitt.
All right, I hear what you're saying, and I have to derail the computer talk, because I'll tell you, it really is the bane of college football. We can all agree on that. There are some delightful games out there, and I want to talk about USC going into Notre Dame, because that's a compelling game, if not two elite teams.
Yeah.
But the other game, let's look back, first of all, to Saturday night, Tebow and company rolling into Death Valley. I happen to think that, I think Tebow likely wins the Heisman. It's a great story. It's a heroic deed to go out there and play and everything. I think they still would have won that game with John Brantley in there. How say you, Ed?
I totally agree, and I think that using Tim Tebow in that circumstance was not smart for them long term.
How so?
A couple of reasons. Number one, if he gets dinged, you may lose him for the season, and Florida could have lost that game and very easily played for the national championship. And I happen to know enough about head injuries to know that the second one is the deadly one. The second one is the one that gives you the most damage long term. And even if he passed all of those tests and was 100%, there still has to be a leap of faith. His family and the staff at Florida still had to take a leap of faith and say, all right, his mental acuity is back to 100%. They still had to take a leap of faith to think that the brain didn't have damage that could be triggered even worse if you were hit in the head. That's factual information, cannot be argued. And I think that we're at a place in college football and professional football and, for that matter, high school football where, and it was Carson Palmer who said it in an interview, I believe it was Sports Illustrated, that someone's going to die on the field soon.
Right.
And we're at a place where these players are so big and so strong and so fast that, and here's the flip side of what we've done. We've got a double-edged sword with how safe these helmets are. You guys know that big helmet like Peyton Manning wears?
Sure.
A different kind of look on the ears. And, mm-hmm. and there's even a newer one that just came out this year that has basically like crush zones.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm obsessed with the aesthetics of sports. And, yeah, I hate the one Peyton Manning wears. This newer one looks a little bit cooler for what it's worth.
A little bit cooler. And that's got what are called crush zones. Just like if you wreck your car into the NASCAR, you know, they have that crush zone around the track. That same type of technology is now being used in helmets. And that's both good and bad. The good of it is if you fall down on the back of your head really hard, it should help you. The bad news is the guy who's coming to hit you doesn't feel it when he drops his head and rips your head off with his helmet. And so we have we're trying to legislate it out of the game, but no one's enforcing it. Nobody's throwing that 15-yard penalty. It's a joke. We got sat down by two different sets of officials this year, the Big 12 and the Pac-10, and all of them said it's a national mandate. If you assume someone targeted a defensive player from the shoulders up, throw a flag. How many have you seen these?
Wow, no, they're too busy throwing flags for guys putting their hands
celebrate.
In the air to celebrate.
Well, I'm sure Taylor Potts has something to say about that as well, the guy from Texas Tech who got lit up by Sergio Kendall.
And so my point being that at some point, the people who run college football, i.e. the coaches, i.e. the medical staff, i.e. the athletic director, need to make a stand and say, Tim Tebow may be mentally ready to play. We don't think he's physically ready to play and sit him down.
Well,
and the argument's going to be that he passed all the tests. But, guys, I'm telling you, talk to any brain specialist. You are more susceptible to a second concussion whenever you're within the first one, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you're still in that danger zone.
See, Ed,
and
I think
the second one is a deadly one.
I think what we need to do too is we made a joke about it last week. I mean, we talked about it jokingly. You know, I think the term concussion is a bit ambiguous to a lot of people. We know it assumes head injury. But instead of saying concussion, why don't you just call it what it is? Bruised brain.
A bruised brain?
Swollen
yeah.
brain. You know, Tim Tebow is probable this weekend, or questionable, because he has a bruised brain. I think that would desensitize us, or do the opposite of desensitizing us to the situation, and actually would shine a big light rather than this word concussion, which just nobody really seems to have an idea. People don't yeah. fear that word.
So, Ed, go ahead with what you're saying.
No. I mean, looking at the game, it was obvious they were concerned about him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, could they have called a more conservative game with Tim Tebow as the quarterback?
Yeah, I agree. I was really, like you said, and also from a practical standpoint, what if he did get hurt and then was out the rest of the season? They knew, Urban Meyer and company knew, that they could take the loss and still win the SEC and go
right,
to the title game. So really, what was
right?
What was the point then?
Either of those if you lose Tim Tebow for the season.
Yeah, and so really, what is Urban Meyer thinking, not just in terms of this season for this team, but also now, doesn't Lane Kiffin, we've already seen Lane Kiffin try and use Urban Meyer's recruiting and so on against him. Now, doesn't every SEC coach, doesn't every big-time coach in the running for a big-time prospect go out there and say, listen, Urban Meyer doesn't care about your son, Mr. and Mrs. Look, you know, he'll throw this kid out on the field in order to win games. I would never do that.
Yes and no, but there's also such a what's the term I'm looking for? Kind of meathead mentality around the game of football,
mm-hmm.
Where people, you know, these types of things, they're just not talked about in football circles. And so I think that could fly in the face of a guy who's trying to negative recruit, because that kid may think, wow, it was awesome that Tim Tebow went out there and played. What a tough guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much, it's almost Cro-Magnon. There's so much energy put into this is a manly sport. I got to tell you guys, I coached a little bit of defense for a while, and if I ever coach defense, the first guy that missed a tackle because he was trying to blow someone up would run every step in the stadium, and I would double it every time they missed a tackle because they were trying to blow up. We are terrible tacklers now in this game. So this idea of toughness about knocking guys out, you know, de-cleating them and all that, what happened to running up, putting your chest on a guy, and wrapping up his jersey?
Well, I guarantee you where you won't be coaching is Michigan. Because making those kids run all day. Getting off the concussion thing for a second, though, I've always maintained that LSU under Les Miles has been very lucky. And, you know, they got into a situation where in the last couple of weeks where you have to ask yourself, are they lucky or are they good? What was shocking to me is I think LSU is overrated this year, largely because, you know, I didn't think much of Jordan Jefferson, and he's done a lot the last couple weeks to prove that. But for as much talent as that team has and as much of an advantage as they did have as playing Tim Tebow coming off a concussion and the night game at home, I can't believe that LSU laid as big of an egg as they did.
They didn't play well. I mean,
I think they played as well as they could have played. That's the sad thing. I mean, maybe they score that touchdown when they get in there, but that was LSU played their best game. That wasn't a game where they just didn't play well. LSU played as well as they could play against that competition with that coaching staff.
I thought, I felt like that opening, the first two or three plays, there were a couple of straight procedure penalties, and I thought, Florida, this is Death Valley, all the hype about how you can't win in there on a Saturday night. I thought, wow, it's really going to happen. They're just going to spook Florida. Tebow is nervous. The team is going to follow his lead, and they're doomed. And then the next thing you knew, they're driving down the field. And that was as good a chance as LSU had the whole game. Yeah, I agree with you. It was such an underwhelming, for such a hype game, that was one of the more underwhelming games overall that I've watched in college football in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it was not exactly exciting. And you know, this whole argument about the SEC is so great. When you watch a game like that, and then you watch what's going to happen in Dallas on Saturday with Oklahoma and Texas, I get it. If you play the two teams together and one wins, they're the better team, i.e. Florida last year against Oklahoma. But for my money, it's kind of fun to watch guys sling it around. It's kind of fun to see. I don't know. Call me new school if you want, but I kind of like to see 35-30. I kind of like that. You know, I like 45 to 42.
Well, I at least like, you know, Ed, I mean, I think what to further that point is you like the execution of it, but moreover, I think you would probably like the teams that set up game plans around being able to score points like that. That's why Rich Rodriguez is fun up there in Michigan.
We're at such a creative peak at this in this game right now for offenses. I love it.
Well, let me ask you a question going back to LSU. This is my point is, let's say LSU played their best game and really showed up. Could that team with that offense and that game plan scored more than 17 points? I mean, no way. How many dinks and dunks in there's only 60 minutes in a game. That team wasn't scoring more than 3 touchdowns.
I disagree. I think that, and look, I think it's a pretty good staff at LSU. I mean, I look at the guys on that staff, and I think, you know, these guys have done it other places, but I just look at some of these offenses that are being run around the country and just the minds, what Chip Kelly is doing at Oregon and people like that. And I just think a guy like that could walk in. I think a young Urban Meyer, could walk into a place like LSU. And yes, those guys would, I hear you about Jordan Jefferson, but I go back to like their bowl game. They limited the package. They moved him around, and he looked great in that game.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to that offense? Why is that not back in the plan? I didn't see a whole lot of that.
Because they weren't playing an exhibition game against a team phoning.
Well, but isn't the answer though? Isn't the answer that the creativity we're seeing around the country is offset by the greatness of those SEC defenses? That the thing that ultimately makes it the best conference is that's where the best defensive players happen to be right now. Florida is loaded.
Here's the thing. Ask any defensive coordinator, and I've asked tons about how you defend the spread. A spread that can both run and pass. And every one of them to a man says, have a good enough athletes to play man-to-man coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them to a man. And the problem is most places can't. So you get to a place like Florida, you get to a place like Texas, actually, and you have enough athletes to play man-to-man on 5 or 6 guys. So the answer is yes. If you have those type of athletes on defense and you have enough to walk – guys, 5, 6 guys away from the line of scrimmage and cover in space? Absolutely. But how often do you really see that? How often do you see, and I guarantee you, even Florida, and I know at Texas they have a couple of weak links in their secondary, there's always going to be 1 or 2 guys, and a really good offensive coordinator is going to find them.
I hear you. And, well, you know, I agree, though, with the shoe that LSU was overrated. A team that, to me, does not look overrated because of how good their defensive players are, Alabama. I know we're weeks away from getting to this place, but I do think Florida, there's just no one left on the slate that has a chance of coming within single digits of them. Bama should probably get through a couple of tricky games, but let's assume that we get to an SEC title game where those two teams are undefeated. Well, how do you see that one going? Shu, we'll go with you first.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, I love Alabama. I was not high on them in the offseason, largely because I didn't think their quarterback play was going to allow them to be as good as they are. But, you know, they're kind of staying out of trouble and just letting that offense, you know, run first and giving it to the defense looking great. Gary Danielson advanced a point Saturday night that it is possible and conceivable that two teams from the SEC could make it to the national championship game. That would obviously have to be Alabama and Florida, thus rendering the SEC championship game irrelevant. Here's what I think. I don't know who's going to win that game. AccuScore ran a simulation on it already, and we had Florida winning 50.2% of the simulations and Alabama winning 49.8%. I mean, they're that close. So, but in reality, after Oklahoma did what they did against Kansas State years ago, and there was this big, you know, what to do about how could you not win your conference but play for the national championship, they did not change the rules. But what they did is they altered the formula. So basically, if you lose on Championship Saturday, I think I'm the only one who calls it that, but Championship Saturday, where you have the conference championship games, if you lose that game that day, it is virtually impossible for you to play for the national championship. And it's for that reason.
Which, by the way, kind of sucks.
It does suck because I do think in this case this year that the two best teams are going to be playing that last week of the year. But we also had that situation 2 years ago or 3 years ago with Ohio State and Michigan, where we thought we were seeing the two best teams, and they put on a dandy of a game, and we didn't get the rematch. You just have to, based on the way the formula is set up, it's impossible for it to happen, and all you have to do is really look back at last year, where Alabama was a consensus number one, and not only the human polls, but the computer polls, was leading in the fourth quarter of that game. I mean, played fantastic.
Hey, Dave?
Yeah.
Dave, I'm going against the evil computers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying Alabama wins that game 51.7% of the time.
Ed, wow.
Ed, I will break you.
What did you say, Dave?
I will break you. Yeah, I was in a rhythm. So I'll just wrap up this point very quickly.
What point? You've made 57 points about computers so far.
Well, look, I know that here's another thing.
And by the way, how exactly are you going to break Ed Cunningham? I'm looking at you, the shoe, and I know what Ed Cunningham looks like. I also know his background as an NFL lineman. How are you exactly going to break him?
Chloroform.
I see. All right. Ask the question.
So here's the gist of it is, I mean, there's two things I want to just finish on. One is, if it would have happened last year where the two best teams could have got in, you would have seen it last year in some situation. Alabama was competitive in that game, could easily have won that game, was consensus number one, and they dropped, I believe, to number four or number five in the polls. Florida jumped ahead of Texas in that game to get into the national championship. And lastly, I know that it gets annoying talking about the computers.
Carry a lot of weight in this deal.
Not only do they carry a lot, but this is how we govern it. I mean, you might hate it, and we can talk about this, that, and the other, but what I'm saying is how it goes. My opinions on how it goes might be wrong, but the fact is the BCS is not going anywhere, and if you want to know the inside dope, you better start analyzing the computers and at least being interested in hearing what they got to say.
I understand what you're talking about, but you guys, to go against what you agree on, which is that if Texas loses to Oklahoma or anywhere else along the way here, that the two best teams, if they meet undefeated, are going to be Alabama and Florida. But I'll tell you, the other side of that is that it is unsatisfying on some level, unless it is an overtime game and one team wins it in the SEC title game. I got to say, I think the majority of college football fans, I think that it would be more enjoyable, it would be more intriguing to see Boise State, if they were undefeated, go in there. I'm not talking about Virginia Tech, even with their one loss, because then you really are splitting hairs to try and say
I could swallow TCU with their schedule. I don't think it'd be great for college football if Boise State got in with their schedule.
It would be the signaling of the apocalypse, not because Boise State is from the WAC. It's because you would basically say, if you play that schedule, we will reward it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the biggest problem of it. And, you know, Boise State deserves not to be punished, but they don't deserve to be rewarded for that game. And lastly,
I hear what you're saying, but so I don't want to get stuck in specifically Boise State.
Yeah, no,
I'm saying,
saying
whether it's Cincinnati or TCU or, I mean, listen, if you have an undefeated Big Ten team, if Iowa ends up running the table and they somehow got pushed out because of one loss, Alabama or Florida, that would be, to me, that would be much worse.
Well,
even though I rationally understand that both of those teams would smoke Iowa at minimum 9 times out of 10.
Well, let me address that point, because there's a very interesting situation developing as well with Iowa. If Iowa goes undefeated and nobody else goes undefeated, you know, let's say Texas loses, Iowa's in. If Iowa goes undefeated and Texas goes undefeated, chances are on November 21st or November 22nd, when the BCS comes out, Iowa would be ahead of Texas in the computer polls. Chances are the BCS polls. Texas would be undefeated. That means they'd also play two more games after Iowa's season ends November 21st. And that, because of that, Texas would get in as the undefeated team over Iowa. The Big Ten has a significant issue, which is their season ends on November 21st, a week before Thanksgiving.
Well, they have some teams. Illinois finally bucked that trend. They're playing two non-conference until like December 5th.
But yeah, exactly. You better get playing on the first weekend of September or December, or you can guarantee that your team will not play for a national championship.
Well, and the funny thing is, when you talk to the folks in the Big Ten, it all goes back to the conference wanting to live in the Woody days, where no one Val shall not play after Ohio State, Michigan. And all the younger coaches in that conference are going, no, you have seen what's happened, right? Mm-hmm. Please stop doing that. And so some schools have started bucking that trend. It was nothing contractual. It was just kind of a tradition thing that they were honoring.
It really is crazy that, you know, that with all the nuances within the NCAA and they are the overriding governing body of the conferences. It is remarkable to me that, you know, we can complain about the BCS and the way it's structured, but that somebody doesn't step in, that the NCAA doesn't step in and say, hey, Big Ten and Pac-10, we don't care what you want. This is just, the credibility is destroyed by four of our BCS conferences having conference championships and you guys deciding, yeah, we're not going to do that. I mean, it is absurd. It's the equivalent of the Yankees saying, yeah, you know what, we're not willing. Anyone out of the American League East, yeah, we're not going to play that first round of the playoffs. We're just going to, we expect to pass into the championship series of the American League. It's just insane that that this is allowed to go on year after year.
Yeah, but that's just like when you live in a state because the law is a little different because that's where you want to live, you know, on certain things. It's the same issue. I mean, Dave, the conferences can decide how to crown their champions any way they want. In the Pac-10, they happen to play everybody. And so that's also part of the problem is these conferences really out of greed decided that they wanted 12 teams so they could divide into two and play a championship game. And so why are they? And the coaches hate it, by the way. There's nothing more that Mack Brown and Urban Meyer and Bob Stoops and Nick Saban hate than, okay, we just finished our season, and we got to go play another game. And it might be against a team that we actually beat earlier in the year, so they're more motivated. I mean, it's just an awful proposition to be in if you're walking into the national title.
You know what? I agree with you that you got it. You're exactly right. I guess I misspoke. I'm just looking at the two teams that are still. I mean, the two conferences that are still out there that are not giving in.
But believe it or not,
you got the Big East. The Big East doesn't as well.
Oh, and the Big East. Right. I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. I think if you right, it is a money grab, and I'm always in favor of the larger body of work wins out. In other words, if you've played 12 regular season games, to then say this 60 minutes is going to override the importance of the previous
Everything.
3 months, I'm always in favor of going
Everything.
With the larger body of work. Yeah, so yeah, but obliterate the conference title games
but
in that case.
You know, yes and no. I mean, I know the coaches hate it, and I know if you're a fan having to line up and play a team, you know, a second time, it's annoying. However, if you want to play for the national championship
and you have one loss, yeah, you're right.
It's fantastic for you. It's enough to get you over the hump. It will get you into that game if you win that game.
Yeah.
I mean, take a look.
If you limp in with one loss early in the season and you upset the undefeated guy, you're in. So
it's the reason why Iowa is basically got no chance of making. It's the reason why Virginia Tech is a one-loss team, will get in if they run the table and if they win their ACC championship game, that it doesn't matter what Texas does and it doesn't matter what anybody else does, that Virginia Tech will get in. So if they didn't have those conference championship games, teams like Virginia Tech and all these guys might hate it, but it's getting them in to the next level.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the same argument for, like I say, for a wild card team. The Florida Marlins wouldn't have won a World Series if it weren't for the wild card. I mean, that doesn't justify the existence of that.
Well, the problem with conference championship games are the divisions. I mean, that's really realistically the problem. You know, we can talk about this forever. But the biggest problem, and Mike Gundy was the only one who spoke to it last year when Oklahoma had to play, you know, a dreadful Missouri team. If you're going to have a conference championship, have the two best teams in the conference play. Mm-hmm. Don't let some team like, you know, Tennessee did 2 years ago.
Some arbitrary coastal or Atlantic division.
Yeah, I mean, play the unbalanced schedules of your division, but at the end of the day, you're going to clear up a lot of stuff if you just would have let Oklahoma and Texas duke it out one more time. Or, you know, if, you know.
Can you imagine, and by the way, speaking as a company man, can you imagine the ratings for that game?
Ooh, la and la. Yeah, that would be, yeah, that really would be terrific. Real quick, Ed, sorry to cut you off, Shoe, but I want to get your thoughts, before we wrap it up here. USC and Notre Dame, one of the great rivalries, untraditional rivalry, considering that they're, 3,000 miles apart from one another here. Everybody's excited about this game. But I think Notre Dame is, and this is not hyperbole, I think they're lucky to not be under 500 right now. And USC is fine. The fact that they are ranked ahead right now of Cincinnati, who's undefeated, and Miami, whose one loss came in soggy Blacksburg, fourth-rated Virginia Tech. USC lost to Washington. How is it possible that the Trojans could be ranked ahead of Cincinnati? I mean, ahead of Cincinnati and Miami. That's crazy to me. And bottom line, how do you see that game going up in South Bend this weekend?
Two answers. Number one, it's because they had a fairly impressive win at a okay Ohio State.
Zing.
I mean, that's it. I mean, that really is the only reason.
I know that's the answer, but of course, Ohio State, as you say, is in fact pretty good, not great, and so it's ludicrous.
I think despite their quarterback, Ohio State's pretty good. I mean, I think that Terrell Pryor experiment needs to gel quickly or figure out something else to do. But defensively, Ohio State, I got to tell you guys up front, that's the best defensive line I've seen all year. So. Mm. And that includes USC and Oklahoma, which I both think are very good defensive lines. But the game itself, the Notre Dame USC game, it's hard to say. Right now, USC doesn't know what they are on offense. They're afraid to expose their quarterback, yet they don't have a running game. This great offensive line that's supposed to have 27 future all pros. I don't see that yet. I do not see a dominant front. I see a group of good, hardworking guys, and you know they have good technique, but I don't see them rolling people off the ball. I don't see them manhandling the point of attack and zone blocking to take advantage of what type of runner Joe McKnight is. I they don't have an identity, and so I agree with you that Notre Dame and I, of course, being a Washington alum, I watched that game very closely. And I don't want to take anything away from Notre Dame, but Washington got jobbed with an overturned touchdown call.
Oh, that was awful.
A few of those things. But that being said, they still have won those games. And it's taken me a long time to come around to it. I have all of a sudden started to think that Jimmy Clausen's pretty darn good, especially in key moments.
I agree with you about that, but you talk about USC and what their identity is. Hey, whatever identity they want to explore, they're going to be able to explore all of those avenues against Notre Dame because they have a terrible defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but USC, I mean, that game feels to me like USC rolls.
Yeah.
It feels to me that after a bye week that favors, even though both of them had one, that favors USC. Because they have the young players, they have the young quarterback who had an injured shoulder, so now he's 100%. They could get rested and healthy, start to figure some things out. It feels to me like USC rolls, but that being said, I'm starting to think Jimmy Clausen's a pretty good player, and who knows, maybe he has a breakout game, and they get a couple of turnovers here and there, and I think it could go the other way. But I feel USC pretty strongly in that one.
See, you know, AccuScore actually agrees with you, Ed. We, you know, I think we have that as a 60% game against the spread. I know you don't really discuss spreads, but, you know, just to say that we do like USC significantly. For me, talking about, you know, the Jimmy Clausen factor and coming off the bye and not knowing who USC is, I think Notre Dame knows who they are. And I think that as a team,
I do too. That's a good point.
That is battle tested. And look, they shouldn't have been in the game with Purdue, and they shouldn't have been in the game with Washington. These are teams they should have blown away based on their talent. Notre Dame wins those games, and win, lose, or draw, they know who they are, and I think they like each other, and I think they believe in each other. And I think at this point in the season, not having to travel, growing that grass out, I think if Notre Dame is ever going to upset SC, this might be the year. I kind of like Notre Dame in this game.
I'm a big believer in the idea that season to season, that, you know, you hear a lot of that talk leading up to big games. Hey, it's time for revenge after what they did to us last year. I think that the talent level that won you the game last year, unless the key figure or figures have moved on to the NFL, I think that carries over. I think that applies here. I think USC blows them out here, blow out relatively speaking, at least covers the 10 points that they're given. All right, listen. Ed Cunningham, a pleasure as always to yap with you. Have a good time in Stillwater. According to the shoe, you can't possibly figure out a way to do that, but I imagine you and Franklin will have a good time nonetheless.
We'll be out doing some two-stepping.
Perfect. All right, we'll talk with you. And the next time we speak with you, you'll hear theme music or Shame the Devil.
Well, I won't speak with you without
theme music.
That's right. So that's pretty easy.
Right. I see. A tough negotiator. There he goes. Ed Cunningham, you can listen to him. Hear his work with Ron Franklin. Missouri and Oklahoma State coming up this weekend on ESPN. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, you.
Thanks to, again, to Ed Cunningham of ESPN and to the Blue Horseshoe of AccuScore.com. We'll be back for more Hooey and Applesauce later on. But in the meantime, thanks so much, podcasters. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Damashek, Damashek, loves Lemieux, hates Belichick, spins a yarn any size, blasts those jerks just like flies. Look out, here comes Dave Damashek. Is he fast? Not a bit, but he makes up for it with tons of grit. If he's wrong, what's he do? Says he's wrong like Corvette taught him to. Hey there, there goes Dave Damashek. Cool Cats smell the case is his fantasy team. When they hit the field, Bill Simmons starts to cry. Damashek, Damashek, his best friend is his TV set. Steelers fan since days of old, instead of red bleeds black and gold. Look out, it's Dave Damashek.